are listening to the Sermon Podcast from Real Life on the Palouse, reaching the world for Jesus, one person at a time.
When I was 14 years old, I went with my grandparents to a friend of theirs, a guy named Kenneth Wyatt. He had an art studio. He was an artist. I know Kenneth doesn't mean that much to people from Idaho, but in Texas, he's pretty famous. And we would go there from time to time, and sometimes Kenneth was there, sometimes he wasn't. He was there this time, and he was painting a painting. And I love art, and I love to draw, but I am a terrible painter. Like, I don't even like painting in my house. Like, it drives me crazy. But I was fascinated watching him do it so easily and so well. So I was like, I'm just going to sit. You go look at the paintings. I'm just going to watch him paint. And while I'm sitting there, Kenneth said, hey, come on, you can help me. And I was like, no. Like, nah, you don't want that. He goes, nah, you can't mess it up. Come on. I was like, oh, challenge accepted. I can mess this up. I promise you. I can take that painting that you're going to sell for a couple $1,000s and make it something somebody hangs on their fridge. Just watch. He's like, no, just do what I say. It'll be fine. As long as you listen to me, you won't mess it up. And I was like, okay. And it turns out he was right. As long as I just did, he was like, just do this, this. And I was like, wow, this actually looks not too bad. And I sat with him for like an hour and worked on this painting while my grandparents were looking around. And then they came back and they said, okay, we've got to go. And I was like, thank you, Kenneth. Like, this was awesome. My grandfather went to Kenneth and he said, Kenneth, if you'll put a cabin in there with a front porch on it and a little dog laying on that porch, he said, I'll just buy that painting from you. And Kenneth said, okay. Now, I think we have a picture of the painting. Maybe. There you go. And you can see I didn't mess it up. Now, maybe he went back and painted over everything I did. I don't know. But this is the painting that he and I painted together. And you might be noticing that when my grandfather went to pick it up, he noticed something. He said, now, Kenneth, I don't see a front porch or a dog. And Kenneth said, oh, the dog's on the back porch. And then he said, I don't paint dogs. And my grandfather laughed. He thought it was great. But I thought, you know, you kind of led him astray. You could have just said, I don't paint dogs. He would have bought it anyway. But you kind of made it sound like you were going to and didn't. He definitely led him astray a little bit. My grandfather thought it was great, though. They were good friends, and he bought the painting anyway because he didn't really care. But today we are going to talk a little bit about being led astray. But first, I want to set the scene of where we are, just to remind everybody what's going on. We're in Capernaum, right? A Jewish city on the edge of the Sea of Galilee. And Jesus has been changing the understanding of the disciples' kingdom of heaven. I think they thought, hey, we're going to start a war. We're going to kick the Romans out. We're going to have a kingdom of, you know, we're going to have a king and all this stuff here in Israel. And Jesus has really been changing that, showing them that, like, no. It's for some of these people too. Maybe for all of them. And so last week they had this question. Well, if this is the case, Jesus, then who's the greatest in the kingdom of heaven? And Jesus kind of alludes to, this is not a great question. I mean, shouldn't it be obvious? It's a spoiler alert. Jesus is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. But he does say, look, if you want to be great in the kingdom of heaven, you've got to do it this way. It's different. If you want to be first, you've got to be the last, the servant of all. And then he contrasts it with this week's scripture, and he says, maybe, I understand you want to be great, do these things, but maybe you should also be really concerned about, make sure you don't cause anyone to stumble. So let's go to our text today, Matthew 18, starting in verse 6. If anyone causes one of these little ones, those who believe in me, to stumble, it would be better if you had a large millstone hung around your neck and drowned in the depths of the sea. Woe to the world because of the things that cause people to stumble. Such things must come, but woe to those through whom they come. If your hand or foot causes you to stumble, cut it off and throw it away. For it would be better for you to enter life maimed or crippled than to have two hands or two feet and be thrown into the eternal fire. And if your eye causes you to stumble, gouge it out and throw it away. It would be better for you to enter life with one eye than to have two eyes and be thrown into the fire of hell. These are some pretty strong words, right? Said to Jewish people in a Jewish town on the Sea of Galilee, very strong words. And it brings me back to last week when we talked about the two generations that came out of Egypt, right? There was one generation of adults that came out and God said, I want you to lead your children into the land, into the kingdom that I have for you. And they said, it's just too big a job. We can't do it. And not only did they not enter, but they caused the ones they were supposed to lead in not to be able to enter. They caused them to stumble. But their children were so faithful. They learned to follow God, to be with him, to walk with him and do what he said. And they entered the land and took possession of it with God. And we talked about, like, which generation will we be? The one that's faithful or the one that causes others to stumble? I think this is a really good question. Because Jesus comes and he says, it would be better for you to have a millstone hung around your neck and drown in the depths of the sea. And I don't know if you know what a millstone is. We have a picture of some, I believe. There they are. So they're these stones. Most of them have a hole through them. A lot of times the two stones go together. They grind them around and it grinds grain and stuff into flour. These are made of basalt. I've seen basalt millstones all over Israel and they're stamped on the bottom, made in Capernaum. Not really. But they are made in Capernaum. Like, you can find them all over. So I think what Jesus is trying to do is he's trying to point out and use pictures that they would understand. I think the conversation actually went something like this. It would be better for you to have one of those hung around your neck and thrown in there than to cause one of these little ones to stumble. Because Capernaum is right on the Sea of Galilee. Like, he's using things they see all the time and things they would understand. Maybe for us, he might say something like, it'd be better for a vandal to hack you to pieces with an axe than to cause one of these little ones to stumble. Don't cause them to stumble. Now, the word stumble in Greek is skandalon. I think we have a definition. The trap stick, let me explain what a trap stick is. So assume that we have this little sapling tree, right? That's pretty bendy. We tie a rope to it, we bend it over, and then we take a little stick and tie it to that stick. We put a little bait on that stick, and we hang that stick really precariously, and then we continue the rope into a noose. So when an animal comes up and stands in the noose and hits that stick with the bait on it, the stick releases, the tree snaps up, and you got it. This is a man-made thing. It doesn't happen naturally. It's something put there really to bring death, to bring destruction, to bring a fall. That's what a skandalon is. And Jesus is saying, don't be a skandalon. We've talked about this a lot this summer. I don't know if you remember. Mitch talked about it in his talk. Josh talked about it in his. Randy mentioned it a couple weeks ago, and it's all through the text today. Don't be a skandalon. This is important. You were designed for something else. Don't cause people to stumble. And then Jesus goes on in the text to say some of the most confusing stuff, right? This is a really difficult text. He says, look, if your hand or foot causes you to sin, cut it off, throw it away. If your eye causes you to stumble, gouge it out and throw it away. And I'm like, are you serious, Clark? Really? Thank you. you really want us to cut our hands and feet off? And I'm assuming we don't take this literally, or everybody in here would have one hand and one foot and one eye, right? Because we are not great all the time at not being led astray. I don't think there would be one person in here with two hands, two feet, and two eyes if we thought this was a literal thing. I don't know a lot of one-hand or one-footed Christians. I do know a couple one-eyed Christians, but it's for a completely different reason. But we must not think this is literal. So then what does it mean? I heard a great sermon one time, and basically the guy said, what you need to do is close your eyes and visualize removing your hand if it's causing you to stumble, or your foot, or your eye, or anything in your life that's causing you to stumble. You have to visualize removing it and setting it off to the side. I don't know if this is what Jesus is talking about, but I think we should do more of it anyway. We are not really all that great at trying to remove sin from our life. What we want to do is more, we want to try to manage it. Right? We think it's almost like in our diet, you need a little bit of fat, you need some sugar, you need this. Like, we got to have a little bit of sin in our life, so let's just try to manage it. I've got it under control. You don't. With sin in your life, one of two things is happening. One, you're trying to remove it, or two, it's getting ready to bring you down. Those are the choices. There's not a third direction. Sin is like a disease, and it just continues to spread and corrupt if you don't get rid of it. There's no third direction. So I think we need to do a better job of trying to take our sin and remove it from our lives. But I'm still not sure that this is everything the text is talking about. Wouldn't it be cool if there was another story somewhere in the text that talked about hands and feet and eyes and stumbling and how to, you know, and sin and a fall and all this stuff? Well, if you know me, you know that I didn't bring it up if I didn't think there was. As a matter of fact, we don't even have to go very far into the text to find a story that does this. Let me set it up. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And this is really cool. God speaks and creation happens. God says, let there be light, and there is light. God says, let there be water, and there's water. God says, let there be fish in the water, and there are fish in the water. Everything God makes, he speaks into existence. Words have power. Words create worlds. And God speaks, and there are plants. God says, let there be animals all over the earth, and there are animals all over the earth. And then on the sixth day, something changes. And this should be our key to pay attention. God stops speaking things into existence, and he puts his hands in the mud. He gets his hands dirty, and he starts to mold. And he makes Adam with his hands. And then he pulls a piece of Adam out and he begins to mold it. And he makes Eve. And our question should be, God, why did you change? Why did you stop speaking and start moving with your hands? And the answer is this. When God made people, he said, I'm going to make them in my image. They will be the image of God. They will represent me here on earth, and they will reflect me to the world. So it's got to be different. You were made in God's image. You were made to reflect him in the world and lead people to him. And then he says to Adam and Eve, I am going to give you dominion over all the earth. I got this beautiful garden for you. You can do whatever you want in it. Except one thing. Don't eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. That's it. Don't eat from that tree. Everything else is yours. Matter of fact, here's what I really like you to do. I have all these animals and stuff, and I need someone to name them. And I was like, dude, this sounds like a lot of fun. Right? Like, I would get to name all the animals. I'd be like, hippopotamus, that's an awesome one. Platypus, yeah, that's a good one. rhinoceros. You know, like I would be coming up. I think I would even call one baloney just because I like saying it. Oh, look at baloney over there. You know, like I love the way he walks. Whatever. I would have just spent my time coming up with the craziest names for animals. It would have been so fun. At least that's what I thought. As I was preparing this message, I started to think about how many animals there actually are. Like hundreds of thousands. And I was like, that seems like that would take centuries to do. Like, I don't know if I would really. Like, I feel like after about a week, I'd be like, cow, pig, dog. I think I would even got to the point where I'm like, this one, bleh, that's what we're going to call it. Like, I don't even care anymore. Like, I don't care. There's so many animals. If my wife and I were Adam and Eve, this is how I picture this going, okay? I picture that, like, at one point, Eve is going, Adam, focus, focus. Touch your nose. No, let me know that you're listening to me. Focus. We only have 87,000 more animals to name. I just need you to focus so we can get through this. And Adam's over there going, oh my gosh, not another bird. Do you know how many birds there are? Like, just call it bird. I don't care. Like, we'll just call all of them bird. And Eve's like, no, we're not going to call them all bird. These are all, they're different. Look, this one's pretty. And Adam's just like, okay, fine, tell me about it. She's like, look, it has this little black cap on it, and it just keeps going, chickadee-dee-dee-dee-dee, chickadee-dee-dee-dee. He goes, fine, call it a black cap chickadee. I don't care. Like, I can imagine I would be done after a few days. Like, let's just call him the easiest thing we can find. And then comes the serpent. And the serpent has a question for them. It says, well, what did God tell you was going to happen if you ate from this tree in the middle of the garden? And they say, well, if we eat from the tree, we will die. And then the serpent says, nah, you're not going to die. This is what God doesn't want you to know. What's going to happen is if you eat from the tree, you're going to know the difference between good and evil. You're going to be like God. And he doesn't want that for you. And he sets his trap. He sets his scandal on. God knows you're going to be like him, and he doesn't want that. Because see, here's the thing. God's position is he gets to decide right and wrong. That's his position. Our position is we get to do it. We get to live that out. We don't get to decide what's right and wrong. We just get to live out what he's told us is right and wrong. But the serpent wants them to think it's not enough. What God has given you isn't enough. Look what you could have. And the text says this, when Eve looked and saw, she saw that the fruit was good for eating and pleasing to the eye, and she reached out and took it. And she ate some, and she gave it to her husband who was with her, and he ate it too. And the trap sprung. And sin came into the world. Now, when God finds out, he says to them, I have got to get them out of the garden, lest they reach out their hand and take from the tree of life as well and live forever. And I know this sounds like a punishment, but I don't think it was. When I was a little kid, about 5 or 6, I developed this fascination with sticking my finger in a light socket. I think it's because somebody told me if I did it, it was going to light my hair on fire. And I was like, you mean like the human torch? Like I could get superpowers? Yes, please. And so I was like, Mom, I was just like constantly asking her, Mom, can I stick my finger in the light socket? And she would just say no. You know why? Because she didn't want me to become a superhero. She didn't want my hair to turn on fire. You know, she didn't want me to have these amazing powers. So she would not let me stick my finger in the light socket. No. She didn't want me to stick my finger in the light socket because she was trying to protect me. She knew what was going to happen and it was going to hurt and I wasn't going to turn into a superhero. And that's where God is with Adam and Eve. He knows that if they stay, if they eat from the tree of life, you see, the wages of sin are death. You have to die. You've created sin. It's in the world. Death has to come, but I can fix it. I can fix it because I can bring you back to life, but not if you eat from the tree of life and live forever. You're stuck with sin forever. So I've got to get you out. Now, like Adam and Eve, I was pretty persistent. And finally, one day, my mom handed me a paperclip and said, go ahead. I did it one time. I know it explains a lot. Right? One time was enough. But God wanted to protect them, so he had time to fix what they had done. You know what's really interesting is Satan tempted them with this idea that if they ate from the tree, they would be like God. They were already like God. They were made in his image to reflect him in the world. Like, that was their job. They weren't God, but they were like him, as close as you can be, made in his image. You are made in his image. Are you going to reflect that to the world, or are you going to cause it to stumble? Jesus said this to the disciples, like, you better be ready to die rather than cause people to stumble. And they were. They went out and most of them died in horrific ways rather than trade the truth of the gospel. Horrific ways. But Satan knows how to get us. He knows how to come at you through your eyes. Just the way he got Adam and Eve. Look. Look at it. It looks so good to eat. Try it. I was in Jerusalem one time and I was praying at the Western Wall and I came out and I was talking with some of our group. We're waiting for everybody to get finished. And I noticed a rabbi and his disciples coming in and they were walking in this strange formation. The rabbi was in front, of course, walking, but the disciples were in a circle behind him with one right in the middle, and the one in the middle was doing this. And I said to my friend Ray, I said, Ray, what are they doing? And he said, he goes, well, he's struggling with his eyes, and they're protecting him. He said, put your hands up like that and see. And I said, well, I can only see what's right in front of me. He said, yeah, all he can see is the feet of the rabbi. And he has to trust that the rabbi is going to take him where he's supposed to go. I said, well, then what are all the guys standing around him for? And he said, well, if he slips or his hand comes down or anything else happens, he's not going to look out and see whatever it is he's struggling with. He's going to see the guy standing next to him. And we need this. We need to focus on the feet of Jesus and just go where he goes. And we need to put others around us who are doing the same thing. So that if we begin to stumble, they can pick us up. That's how we're going to do this. We're going to do it together, focused on Jesus. That's the way we get through it. Satan knows how weak you are in the eyes. He's coming for it. As a matter of fact, after Jesus is baptized, he goes into the wilderness, he spends 40 days fasting, and then Satan comes to tempt him. And you know what the temptations are? One of the temptations is this. He takes Jesus up on a very high mountain, shows him all the kingdoms of the world and their splendor, and he says, all of this can be yours. Look at how awesome it is. It can be yours, Jesus, if you'll just bow down and worship me. Everything can be yours. Worked on Adam and Eve, works on you and me. But Jesus doesn't take the bait because he knows that his eyes can deceive him, but the word of God is right and true. And he says this, away from me, Satan, for it is written, worship the Lord your God and serve him only. And the devil has to flee. He knows that you, why do you think we have so many, like everywhere you go, there are signs or magazines or some, you know, in your little reel, there's all kinds of scrolling, you know, because it's coming through your eyes. It's the quickest way to get to your heart. Your eyes are the lamp of your body, the text says. And God gave them to you. And do you know what your eyes actually do? This is what your eyes are designed for. They literally just let light into your body. That's what they do. Your brain interprets it as pictures. And it goes into your heart. And for the most part, right, we see it. We go, yeah, I got to have that. Look, so-and-so has that. I got to have it. I see it. I want it. I reach out my hand and I take it. I want these things that I see. But it's not my eyes that are the problem. It's my heart. Because God gave me those eyes and he gave me to see the way that he sees. But not the way that I choose to do it. My eyes are supposed to let in light, and yet I use them to allow darkness in so often. Let me give you an example. This is a very personal example, something I struggle with a lot. When I drive, I can get very creative about other people who are driving around me. Right? I look and I look up, and part of the reason I can do this is because when I look up, I can't see your face. I can't see a person inside there. All I can see is there's a Subaru there. And once again, they cannot figure out how to work the four-way stop. It's amazing because the four-way stop just sits here every day doing the same thing. I mean, it works the same every day, and yet this Subaru can't figure it out. I'm kind of to the place, like, if you go to buy a Subaru, they should just take your license away from you. Some of y'all know what I'm talking about. Right? But it's because I can just say, like, Subaru, I don't have to know there's a person in there. But what if that person got out? What if I had to look them in the face? What if they said to me, Ben, today I lost my dad. Today I found out my marriage is over. Today I found out one of my kids has an addiction and I don't know what to do. What if I saw the image of God in them and who God created them to be and all the things that they are struggling with? My response would be very, very different. That's why we have eyes. So we can see the image of God in others. So we can see their pain and we can do something about it. God wants you to see needs and step into them. And I say this not from the perspective of like, hey, tell the government. Not even just tell your church to do something about it. If you see a need, step into it. You have eyes to see it. You have hands to fix it. Use them the way God intended and do something. Yesterday, we had a back-to-school giveaway here, and there were so many people, and so many people were just so thankful. Why would you guys do this? Because God wants us to take from what we have and give to others. Sometimes we might have to live with less so other people can have enough. In Acts 2, last week I said this verse, to this week I think it goes even better, says this, all the believers were together and had everything in common. They sold property and possessions so that they could give to anyone who had need. And the Lord added to their number daily those who were being saved. That's what God is asking us. Can you take what I've given you and give to others, even when it hurts? Especially when it hurts. God, let us have your eyes so that we can see the things in the world that need our intervention. Now, the first time I get to preach out of Matthew chapter 8, and I want to show you how Jesus does this. It's one of my favorite stories about Jesus because I think it embodies the character of God so well. But in the beginning of Matthew chapter 8, a man with leprosy comes and falls at Jesus' feet. And he says, Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean. And Jesus sees him. And I mean really sees him. And I can tell you that because of the way Jesus responds. Jesus doesn't speak his healing into being. Jesus takes his hands, reaches out, gets them dirty, and touches the man. Jesus touches a man with an incurable, communicable disease, risking the entire kingdom because it's that important. If Jesus gets leprosy at this moment, like, it's over. But Jesus was so sure of his mission and who he was that he knew, I have to reach out and touch him. And I promise you, this is the first time he's been touched since he found out he had leprosy. He has to wear a bell. He has to be wrapped. He can't come within 20 paces. He has to live outside the city. No one touches this man. Nobody. And the first one to do it is Jesus. Because Jesus knows he's got to get his hands dirty. And Jesus reaches out and touches him. This is the kingdom he's promising. He wants to be with you. He wants you to be the image of God you were created to be, not lead people astray. You are the image of God. Don't become less. You are designed to reflect God in the world and lead people to him. Don't lead them astray. And if you want to be a part of this kingdom, or you've been far away and you want to come back, you come find me or one of the other pastors afterwards. This is for you. You were created in the image of God, and that's what you're meant to do. Be like Jesus. Because Jesus, even on the cross, Jesus is hanging on the cross and they're taunting him. They're saying, if you really are the Son of God, just come down. We'll believe. But Jesus knows, I can't do that. That is not the image of God that I was created to be. I have to stay on this cross. And do you know what his prayer is for the people who crucified him and who are mocking him? He says, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. And Jesus is asking us to be like him. To forgive when it hurts, especially when it hurts. Are we going to be like Jesus, or are we going to go out into the world and be scandalons? It would be better to die than to be a scandalon. Go be the image of God in the world. Now we're going to do communion. If you need one, raise your hand. Somebody will bring it to you. Earlier that evening, before Jesus is on the cross, he's betrayed by one of his disciples. But during the meal, he takes the bread and he says, this is my body given for you. And he breaks it. Do this and remember me. Let us remember. And then after the meal, he took the cup. He says, this is my blood of the new covenant. When you eat of this bread and you drink of this cup, remember me. Remember the image of God you are to portray. Go into the world and be like me. Let us remember. Blessed are you, O Lord our God, King of the universe. Father, I thank you so much that you got your hands dirty, that you reached down into the mud and pulled us out of it, and that you want to keep doing that. You're not tired of getting your hands dirty. You're not tired of forgiving us, God. You just want us to be with you. Teach us what it means to be your image in this world. Let us go out and live that well. We ask these things in Jesus' name.
Thanks for checking out this message from Real Life. You can find out more about us by visiting liferotp.com and connecting with us on Facebook and Instagram. Until next time, have a great week.